ask Catherine lots more questions. Again, thank you for the links. We've gotten a lot of great links from you this week. Hi, Catherine. Can you ask Rob Kirby to explain how the paper market and futures has what the sellers of gold bullion call naked shorts, when every paper contract has a buyer and a seller? Will do. We're going to be focused on interest rate swaps more than gold-related trading, but I would be delighted to ask him. That'll be at the end of April. It seems the gold bugs, including Franklin Sanders, pretend the market, the paper market, is fake pricing somehow. I don't understand this claim. We can go through it. It's a combination of different things, false shorts and false sales. All you need to do is sell lots of gold when you don't have it, and you can always keep forcing the paper price down. Hopefully you got this question in time. Yes, we got this question. I see that you linked to Martin Armstrong. I often wonder why you have not interviewed him. It would be great if you could interview Martin. I haven't interviewed him because we often disagree, and I'm not comfortable promoting his work. It's interesting, he just came out with a little snippet that attacked unnamed people for saying that the ESF was an important slush fund, which he disagrees, but he then accused the people promoting this outlandish theory of doing it so that they could sell newsletters, which is ridiculous. Rob Kirby would no more say anything to sell a newsletter than the man in the moon, neither would I. It was just a cheap shot based on no knowledge, and it was ignorant and rude. That's not normally, you know, that's not my problem with Armstrong's work. My big problem is I don't believe in black boxes or trying to predict the future. I've seen so many investors harmed by getting attached to a specific and certain view of the future. I just think it's, you know, we have to be prepared to deal with multiple futures, and we have to really look at the world in terms of taking responsibility to invent the future. I just think it leads to very bad practices and very bad habits. You go on to say, it seems the two of you have had a similar experience getting rolled by the feds. Martin says the bankers manipulate everything, picking up pennies on every trade. He said never, ever do they have a long-term trend changing manipulation. That's just, frankly, a bunch of bullshit. Absolutely, they do pick up pennies on every trade. But they absolutely do long-term trend manipulation. Read Jim Norman's wonderful book, The Oil Card, on the manipulation of the oil price, the pump and dump of the housing markets, the strong dollar policy, which included the manipulation of the gold price. Absolutely, they do long-term trend-changing manipulation. It's their forte, if you will. You know, when I hear him say things like that, I think, I wonder what deal he made to get out of prison. In fact, he says oftentimes the bankers are manipulating the price on the upside. That can be true, too. Really, old stockbrokers say, of course, the market is manipulated like having your stops run. Don't complain, that is the way the world works. Accept it. I disagree. What you think and what you do is important, and that kind of hopelessness is mind control, and I just don't buy it. So, as I said, we have plenty of things to disagree about. Hi, Catherine. As one of your new subscribers to the Salieri Report, I had an opportunity to read the ESF of March 9, 2017 and learn so much information that I never even knew existed. Thank you. Toward the end of the PDF version is this by you. Enforce the Constitution. I've been working with a group of people to come up with a list of all the different things that we can do to enforce the Constitution. So my question is this. How can any of us, quote, enforce the Constitution when we all are considered, quote, enemies, rebels, belligerents, statutory citizens under 50 U.S.C. App 5B as amended by the Emergency Banking Relief Act of March 9, 1933, 12 U.S.C. 95A? In addition, how can we, the people, enforce the Constitution when we were never a party to it? The courts have already ruled as such, and people are still under the illusion that somehow we, the people, are a party to the Constitution. Yes, it is true that we are the posterity beneficiaries of the Constitution, but only the states and the federal government are the actual parties to it. It seems to me that the first step needs to be a change in status from enemy, belligerent, rebel as U.S. citizen to private citizen again, then as beneficiaries. We can enforce the Constitution. Do you agree, disagree? I disagree. First, let me say I'm not a lawyer, and I have a tendency to not pay a lot of attention to legal issues, because in my experience, you know, one of my favorite lines from the old TV show Dallas was, JR turned to Bobby and he says, boy, nobody gives you, oh no, I'm sorry, it was Jock turned around to Bobby, who was complaining about JR's behavior. He says, boy, nobody gives you power, you take it. And with some exceptions, I don't see the taking of power coming from legal action in the courts. I think it happens when people use their intention, their time, their attention, their cash flow. If enough people shift together, you know, major shifts in culture, consciousness, money can shift many, many things, particularly when you get a consensus of 80% or more. So that's why I think their efforts to manipulate the field and consciousness are so very important. That's why they spend an absolute fortune on fake news, because in fact, if you look at our control of time and cash flow, it's much more compelling than many kinds of things in courts. Now, that you can say we're not the beneficiary of the Constitution, but the reason they're spending so much time and money trying to change the Constitution is because they want to make sure we can't enforce it. So they seem to believe that we have the power to enforce it because they're trying to rip it up. So so I disagree that we've got to change our legal standing before we can enforce. I think it's very, very possible to enforce just by shifting the money. One of the reasons everybody's being so quiet and careful in this respect is they want to make sure those tax receipts come in on April 15th. Let's see. Hi, Catherine. I recently listened to the interview you did with Rob Kirby on the ESF. Excellent work, by the way. I'm interested in digging deeper into the HUD New York Fed ESF connection, focusing on the exploitation and profiteering of the U.S. housing market. I wondered if you could direct me to Salieri resources or other writings on that topic or related material. Thank you for your help. I am so excited that you said this, because this really needs to be done. So I would love to help and support you. Part of doing this is trying to link the individual mortgage and servicing with the pooling into mortgage securities into trading with derivatives. And it's one of the things that I will make sure we talk about in the interest rate swap discussion. Let me suggest a few things that might be helpful background to you. One is, if you want to look at sort of the bread and butter beginning frauds at the individual mortgage level, which is, you know, how do you issue 5 mortgages on one house in a year and default 5 mortgages on one house in a year? Or how do you issue 10 mortgages on one house at the same time? You know, questions like that. I would have you read, one way to do it is to go back and read the materials on the older Iran-Contra frauds. One book I would start with is The Mafia, CIA, and George Bush by Peter Bruton. Another thing that gets into the Iran-Contra fraud are the Kemp tapes, which are, if you go to the Jack Kemp obituary on the Salieri.com site, you will see 5 cassettes that I recorded at the request of my attorneys. And it's just a very raw recording of my chronological recollections of working in the Bush administration. I would read, there's a commentary I did on Buffett and mortgage fraud that I would read. So read Bruton, listen to the Kemp tapes, watch the Soprano TV show did 4 TV shows on the basic single-family HUD fraud. It's basically the fraud that destroyed my neighborhood. It's been going on at HUD for years. So I would see if you can find the Tony Soprano TV show. There are 4 shows on Tony Soprano making money on HUD fraud. Then I would read my Dylan Reed story, Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits. Then I'd read The Myth of the Rule of Law. This is all going to give you snippets. then I'd look at the missing money, go to our missing money page and look at sort of the missing money from HUD, and sort of think a little bit about why Community Wizard was so dangerous, because essentially what was happening, you had many more mortgages in the out in the market than you had houses. And a lot of that was being papered over and covered up by government, either mortgage insurance or securitization with government vehicles like Ginnie Mae that had full faith and credit. Finally, there's a great deal of work being done, not by me, but by other people on mortgage servicing fraud and how it connects with the MERS system. And I would go dig that up and start going through that. Because that gets you from the individual mortgages into the pooling of the mortgages. And then, of course, the question is how does that translate into derivatives? And I think very much the derivative story is a story of bringing down interest rates to make the pooling really go, and to get enormous leverage. So again, we'll talk about that with Rob Kirby, and it would be great as you're reading this material if you could send me your thoughts and questions. A lot of the different information is spread around in the different stories. So, if you will dig in and start to think about these things, it would be very exciting for me because it definitely needs to be thought through. Part of the angle on this is the financial fraud at the individual level, I believe, was laundering drug money. And so it can help you to look at some of the, maybe read a book like Dark Alliance by Gary Webb, because you'll start to see the cash flows pouring in that need to be financed, or need to be laundered through the kinds of mortgage fraud. And in fact, one of the things I think that got the Department of Justice seizing Community Wizard was the maps we were doing of South Central LA, which was contiguous to the where the Dark Alliance money was coming in that Gary Webb was writing about. So, if you have the capacity, I would read Dark Alliance and think about the kind of monies. I believe that they were laundering a lot of the drug money through HUD government accounts, and that's how they were beating the money laundering laws. And a lot of that money was being pulled up and saved in government accounts, including the ESF, is my guess. Hi, Catherine. It's one of your fans from the City of London. The city is imploding post-Brexit, intentionally engineered, and seems to be taking my beloved country with it. So I'm off. Been offered a great job in Sydney with a global broker. I'm off to Australia on Tuesday. I know it will be the same old stuff, but at least the weather will be better. I look forward to catching up with Soleri and your great YouTube interviews from down under. Do let me know if you're going to be in Oz anytime soon. Keep being fabulous and may God watch over you. Warmest regards. Sydney is so wonderful. It really is. Australia really is the lucky country. So you're going to have a great time. I'm curious to know why you think the Queen was committed to imploding the city. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that after you've had time to reflect. The Soleri team, do you know that Soleri.com made it into the following list from Harvard? False, misleading, clickbaity, and or satirical news sources. The reasons were identified in their category labeled unknown, along with other great sites such as Tragedy and Hope and many others. Keep up the great work. Actually, this is one I finally decided to run down just because it's so important to be precise. Harvard put up Steve Ledman, who can not pay attention to details, unfortunately, put up an article saying that Harvard had done a list of fake news and mentioned a whole bunch of people who were on it, including Soleri. So if you click through, in fact, the library at Harvard had a fake news section on their website. They linked to the associate professor of media at Merrimack College, who had made a fake news list. That linked to the professor's website, who was then doing apparently has been doing this with her students, and they've created two links, reliable and unreliable, and we're not on either list. But apparently there was one list where they were collecting things to look at, and Solari was on there, and it was described as unknown, which meant nobody had really looked at it yet. It had just been selected. Anyway, in my notes, I put all the links, and so, you know, what can I say? Solari's not on the credible list, not on the uncredible list. If you look at the credible list, it's media that has significant sovereign backing or big financial resources. It's really funny. And, you know, so I think the most important thing to credibility is no material omissions. And if you look at the list of media on the credible list, it's just one queen and king of material omissions after another. So I will say this, it's always helpful to have massive resources to produce a better publication, but I would rather know the truth of 9/11 than and put up with a few spelling errors than have perfect spelling and not know the truth of 9/11. Anyway, so my take on all of this is it's very easy to be sloppy about the details and say that, you know, Harvard has not created a list of fake news. So they just haven't done it. And if you run it all down, it's all very sort of imprecise and messy, and very much designed by this professor to affirm the official reality in the fake news network. I do think this, I don't think if anybody has proved that they have zero integrity on this topic, it's Harvard Corporation. And so I have no idea why any of us would waste any time on looking, thinking about, or worrying what Harvard thinks. Harvard's conflicts of interest and their behavior on Iran-Contra and the housing bubble. Harvard is a corporation. They have, you know, they're one of the largest investment syndicates in the world. They're there to make money. And their professors are basically, you know, you have plenty of professors knocking around there who have integrity on different subjects. But basically, as a source, the whole thing is beyond compromise. So why were you even worrying about or thinking about it? So I haven't done a good job if I haven't persuaded you to simply ignore Harvard and any discussion that Harvard would have of fake news. Anyway, enough said. Hello, Catherine. I will definitely be listening to Unpacking Your Community Financial System. I know the city manager wants to start a Citizens Academy, and I volunteered to help, so I will have that in mind when I listen to your broadcast. What a great idea. Just as an update, I want you to know the first group of college students completed a day on the job with city code enforcement employees. Fabulous. The students submitted written evaluations of their experience. Their reports were enthusiastic and positive. Some reported observing a city employee advising a resident on ways to repair or maintain their property. Another student talked about having to help collect an annoying boa constrictor. Oh my God, can you imagine? The next, our local sheriff's deputy will come for a Q&A with the class. The students have been advised that the city and county and state are the largest employers in our area. Oh, that's fabulous. The more they can learn about what really goes on in a sheriff's department, it would be wonderful, wonderful. Later in the semester, a local organic farmer will speak about clean food production as an entrepreneurial option. I hope to continue these activities and add new programs too. Your training will be used to help enrich the learning experience. I will keep you posted as we move forward. Okay, well, if you ever want to write when it's through, when that semester is through, if you want to write a report, I'd love to publish it. Catherine, I've recently moved to a small island on the west coast of Canada. I have a garden with my wife, and I'm working through Dr. Farrell's books. What three or more books would you recommend that a person read in order to self-educate for the times that are here and coming? If you don't have Encyclopedia for Country Living, it's really a must. It is the Bible of living on the land and living the rural life. Believe it or not, it's by Carla Emery, who also wrote the definitive book on mind control, Secret Don't Tell. As when I last looked, Encyclopedia of Country Living was the number one best-selling book on the Lehman's website and very good seller on Acres too. So I strongly recommend Encyclopedia for Country Living. Also healthcare, any books you can use to, and there's an endless number of great books on healthcare, but to learn more about how to do your own healthcare, Where There Is No Doctor Where There Is No Doctor Handbook is a good one. Dr. Gwen Scott, it's not a book. She has a DVD series where she basically shows you how to turn your kitchen into a hospital. Now, she has passed, but I believe the website is still up and DVDs are still available. And so if they are, I would definitely get her series on how to turn your kitchen into a hospital. Another one I would read is Lynn McTaggart's The Field. I recommended it in the seminar that we did this evening on unpacking your financial ecosystem. But I think The Field is a very powerful concept and one you really want to understand when it comes to place. Bill Mollison's Permaculture Designer's Manual is another one I would read. I think has some wonderful ideas and concepts of how to make your homestead really efficient and low cost and sustainable. Then another one is the World Almanac of books. I love to read the World Almanac every year. It's just a good overview of all the statistics of everything going on overtly on the earth. And then finally, In the Dark, Jason Bawden-Smith, excellent book about EMF radiation and how to protect yourself. And even though you're going to be off away from the cities, I think it's really important to understand how to protect yourself. If you look at this year's wrap-up and you go back through the old wrap-ups, you'll see lists of our best book picks for the year. So I focused a little bit more on sustainable living in my picks for you. If you want another one from the best books for both, I don't know if it's this year or last year, Richard Dolan's UFO in the 21st Century Mind. Excellent, excellent. But take a look at the back wrap-ups and all the book lists there. And, of course, we have great this year. We did one list of just our favorite food documentaries. And that's very inspiring if you're growing a garden. Dear Catherine, thank you for your interview with Rachel L. McIntosh and Rob Oswell of Shadow Citizen. In the interview, you mentioned helping a friend to get rid of diabetes with a DVD. Would you be so kind as to direct me to this? The DVD was simply raw. It was about Dr. Gabriel Cousins' Arizona clinic. My friend couldn't afford to take the time off from work to go to the clinic, so he found a local group that would do something similar in the Pasadena area, and I'm sure you can too, but get Simply Raw, watch it, and go from there. Hi, Catherine. Would you talk a bit about the practical legalities of investing in a local business? An innovative group here, Austin Foodshed Investors, has been coaching and educating small producers in the local food space, helping them with business plans and connecting them to appropriate sources of capital so they're ready for it and use it well. They have helped deploy over $1 million now in local businesses. I notice they only entertain accredited investors. That sounds like they are navigating a legal landscape, yes, and it effectively eliminates me from participating as an investor. Our Solari group has tentatively agreed that we would like to materially invest in a local business. I know a group who passionately want a farm. They maintain a consistent presence at farmers markets throughout the area. They appear to be in the most committed and likely to succeed of the few dozen starting farmers I've talked to. How would our Solari group appear legally to consider investing in the group's enterprise? Thanks, Jim. I posted links on legal issues of local and startup investing. Take a look. I would also check to see whether Texas has done a crowdfunding bill that you could use. I recommended that you watch The Real Dirt on Farmer John. It's a DVD that shows a real estate purchase and lease done to help a farmer, and that's a very good example of the kind of thing you could do. I don't know Texas securities law. You may be able to do loans without getting across of the securities law, which is what drags things into the accredited investor status. So I know one of the people in your group, so I'm going to make some suggestions about them as to other things I might add. Hi, Catherine. I'm the member of a small family office. We have a lot of oil and gas interests with emphasis on Permian Basin. We also invest quite a bit in several real estate product types in Texas, Virgins, and Phoenix. We also direct lend on real estate. We have 4% invested in mining equities and PM. We are 50% cash after taxes. I'm working to find a home for 20%. Hope to hear from you. We don't do investment advice on the Solari Report, so I can't do that. And don't do that. But I would say this for diversification. You're doing land, you're doing real estate, you're doing commodities, you're doing precious metals, you're not doing technology. And we are in the shift from what we call in the Solari Report from 2.0 to 3.0. You've got a tremendous amount happening down you're in the Permian Basin, so maybe it's just east in Austin, and it might pay you to get to know some of the venture groups in Austin. There are a lot of good people doing some very, very interesting things that would complement the more grounded commodity stuff and land stuff you're doing. Hi, Catherine. I've enjoyed the last two conversations with Dolan and Kirby on the ESF. I was wondering if you could share your thoughts on how the dark pools are or maybe used by the ESF to limit transparency. It seems to me that they have to be. I found very little reliable information in the dark pool, so I'm much more ignorant than I'd like to be. If anybody has any recommendations on reliable sources on the dark pools, do let me know. And I will bring that up to Kirby. He may know more than me. But intuitively, to me, it's just absolutely obvious that the ESF is depending and using the dark pools. It wouldn't surprise me if they're the ones that really financed and finagled the development of the dark pools with the big New York Fed member banks, starting for that purpose. If you go in, make sure you listen to the interview with Helen Chapman, because when you hear how the Madoff thing was engineered, it's just mind-boggling. But you can see how amazing the whole system is at the center. I'm also very much interested with Rob Kirby's take on this, and if you would share it with him as a topic in the upcoming conversation on interest rate swaps. Thanks for your brilliant conversations. Kind regards. And I'm looking forward to the Pasadena launch. Me too. Again, that's May 6th in Pasadena.